Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Yes, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to break it down from Finglish to English, and I've got some different things to share with you today. I said, you know what? I'll be the guest today, so joining me on the program is David Holland. All right, so let me tell you about some things I'd like to talk about. You know, one of the things that's convenient for me in doing this radio program is that I have a lot of real-life situations I work with doing the financial planning here in my Ormond Beach, Florida office. And I've had a couple of recent situations I wanted to talk about. One is there's a lot of folks in my local market that work for a hospital that has made an offer of a lump sum buyout of pensions. They have a pension that's available through this healthcare provider, the hospital, and they've got the option of taking a pension for the rest of their life, even if they're already drawing on that pension or they haven't started yet, the hospital is offering a lump sum buyout. Now, the reason I mention that to you is these types of things happen, but it's got a lot of people wondering, and I'm glad to say a lot of people coming in and talk to me about it. And so when something like this is presented and you have different people who say different things about it, you know, advisors might say one thing, the hospital or the person who's trying to give you a lump sum might have something they say, the materials they give you might be have a certain message, the banker, the CPA, everybody might have a different opinion, your neighbors might have different opinions, and your coworkers all might have different thoughts. So they all might be thinking one way, but you're not sure. What I want to tell you is anytime something like this comes along, it's really important that you get advice. Not saying come see me, although that's fine, but what I'm saying is you want to sit down with somebody and get somebody who's objective, who can guide you, because I've been meeting with several people from this in my local market for this hospital buyout, and I can tell you that the answer I'm giving is not the same. It's varying according to the person's situation. I just met with somebody who I said, yes, you need to take the buyout. For you, it makes a lot of sense. Now, a couple weeks ago, I met with somebody where I said, you absolutely need to keep the pension, based on your situation. So different advice, two different people. You say, well, David, shouldn't it be, if it's good, shouldn't it be right for everybody? Like a stock or a mutual fund or a CD. If you say it's good for one person, shouldn't it be good for everybody else? And of course, the answer for that is no. You have to do something, you know, that is appropriate for you. So that's one thing I wanted to share. If you're faced with that decision, get help and get help with somebody who's actually studied it and read the actual full document. All right. Another thing I want to talk about is I had another couple come in recently. They have been managing their own money, doing it themselves, and they've got two primary assets. They've got a portfolio, they have income, they're retired, and one of them's retired, one's about to retire. And their two primary assets, three. They've got cash, they have a 401k where the husband works, and it's got just a couple of mutual funds, and one mutual fund, and the rest of it's in cash, and then they've got real estate. And I really enjoyed meeting with them and talking with them, and one of the things that really jumped off the page at me is looking at their situation. They're like, well, what do I do? You know, we like the real estate, we've done well with it. Well, with this one, we got a couple different properties. One of them's not doing as well, but the other doing all right. We've got equity, which of course, you know, a lot of the frustration with real estate for a lot of people has been not having equity or getting turned upside down where the equity's disappeared. You know, it's only equity if you cash in. It's a paper gain until you cash it in or you sell. And a lot of people, ask a friend or ask, you know, lots of people, maybe you've experienced that yourself. So it's not real until you cash it in. So they've got the equity, they've got the 401k, and then they've got cash. And they said, what do we do, David? We're ready to, you know, the husband's going to retire in about 6 months. What do we do? So, and we've got debt, and we've got these different things. So what I did is I talked them through it. Number one, you need to have cash for emergencies. You've heard me talk about that on the program very often. So I want you to keep some cash, but I also want you to have some of that money go to work and not just sit there. The other thing with the 401k, they can roll it out. Actually, he can roll it out now, and you can roll that into an IRA. No taxes on that, and give yourself a world of choices. You know, almost always with a 401k, a couple of things. Number one, the company picks the provider, you know, so if it's a Fidelity or if it's a John Hancock or American Funds or, whoever the provider is, the employer picks that, and then that provider makes certain funds or investments available inside that 401k. So you're not really, don't have a lot of control there. And the challenge is if there aren't that many choices or there are not that many good choices. And also the fact that you're kind of on your own, although there's some helpful websites and things like that. So if you've got the opportunity, like this gentleman, where you can move that money out, a lot of plans, it will let you take money out if you're over 59 and a half, and it's called an in-service distribution. And they'll let you take the money out, even though you're still working, and roll it into you can roll it, take the cash, or whatever you want. But this gentleman can roll it into an IRA and now have a world of choices. Maybe we move that over to Fidelity, where he can hire somebody to manage the money. And that's what I'm going to propose to do for him. I've got the whole universe now of no-load mutual funds and all kinds of things that I can do. And Scott can manage that money for my client. So that's an option. Or we might even look at something where we want something for income, like an annuity. We can roll that 401k over into an annuity that's still an IRA. I haven't changed it from being qualified money. I'm going to make sure it goes into an IRA, not pay any taxes, and then either just let it sit out there and accumulate, or use that to replace some of the income you're giving up by retiring. And then the third piece, which is the one that they're attached to that real estate. You know, when I did the math, this is very interesting. I brought this with me to look at. They've got about $600,000 in equity and in a couple of different pieces of property. And they get, because of the mortgages, taxes, interest, all of the maintenance and all that on these properties, they net about $15,000 of income a year. You say, okay, well, that's good. But the challenge is that it's a lot. It's work, and the property is not local. They have to travel. So, and you might imagine they might have a management company helping. So if we took that equity, and again, it's real money if we cash it in, and reposition that, repurpose that money, and they took that, they paid their taxes. Let's be honest, taxes are not going to be lower in the future. We all know it. It's not going down. They're not done with it. This latest round of tax negotiations just really let them take the pressure off of the automatic spending cuts. So they're going to come back to it. The Fed and states may address this in a number of different ways. So taxes are probably as low as they're going to be unless there is some sort of comprehensive reform, and I just don't think that's going to happen. So pay the taxes on the property, on the equity. So you clear, maybe after hiring somebody to sell the property, of course, a realtor or whoever, commercial real estate, let's say you clear 500. They could take the 500 and invest that to give them more income than they were getting from the rental property and a whole lot less headache. You know, collecting that check in the mail each month or having it directly deposited is a lot less work than having to deal with the real estate. I got a big raise of the eyebrows from Lisa on that one. So that's a couple of things I've seen recently. You know, and again, there's also emotional or personal attachment to certain things like real estate, or maybe to a value that was 5-10 years ago. You know what? Move on. And, you know, that's where getting somebody to look at it for you is real helpful, because a financial planner does not have an attachment to your property. They have an attachment to helping you do the right things with your money. Lisa says, time for a quick break. Let's do that, and we'll come back. I've got some more things to discuss with you. Stay tuned.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market?
How can you tell?
It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation, or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're back. So here's another story for you. I had another couple come in recently that we were talking, and they said, you know, we think we got things pretty much figured out, but we'd like to have a second opinion, which, man, I think that's so smart. And so we sat and we talked through what they had. And again, another couple, a different couple this time, but they have some real estate. And the husband is retired. This time the wife is still working. And they have one account that really is their main savings account. And it was an IRA rollover, and it is invested in a variable annuity. And one of the things, of course, as you know, if you've listened to this program, is I just caution people about making sure they understand whatever their investment products are. And it seems like the variable annuities just aren't, either they don't get explained very well, or they're just the complexity, people's comprehensions or understanding or memories about how they work fade. Maybe they knew how they work when they got them, but So as we talk through the variable annuity, helping them understand it, what I found was that they really were looking for this annuity to give them income and to be a source of security, protection. Well, as the name implies, a variable annuity, it varies in value. It's a security. Its principal is subject to market fluctuations based on what you invest in inside of that annuity. So if you buy or put all your money into aggressive growth, high-octane mutual funds, as I call it, inside of a variable annuity, and the market goes down, guess what? You're going to lose money inside that variable annuity. So that's number one. I shared that with them and explained that to them. The second thing is, and this was kind of interesting, I said, well, are you familiar with how the fees work? Because that's something else that you want to make sure that you understand. And they said, well, yeah, the broker that helped us with it said that his company pays him. And I said, okay, that's good. Okay, but what? That's not really the question. What are the fees you're paying on the annuity itself? Do you understand how the investment itself works? That's exactly what I got, silence. They did not understand that. So I'm doing an analysis, and I'm going to have them come back in, and I haven't had a chance to dig into it yet. But unfortunately, very often, people do not understand. And again, people that you would look at them or talk to them and think they're otherwise very sophisticated, very smart people. I've had all kinds of people in my office that have been, you know, doctors and attorneys and all sorts of specialties and special careers, and they don't understand some of the things because it's not the language that they're used to, and they just don't get it. So I'm going to analyze it and get back with that couple, and I already know from having done a little bit of reviewing it that there's some questions that they need answered. So if you have investments that you don't understand or you're thinking about moving into an investment, please make sure you understand very clearly what it is. In fact, that reminds me of another story. I had a gentleman who emailed me recently because he reads the column in the News Journal on Sunday. And this is pretty neat. He said, I'm going to be retiring from a local, it's a large company, but a local affiliate. And he goes, I'm going to be retiring and I'm going to need X, Y, and Z. Here's what I'm going to need. And I've had a couple of financial advisors working on some recommendations for me, but I'm not sure if what they're recommending is right. So what that told me is he's not really sure he's working with the right advisor. If you don't have a real comfortable feeling about who you're working with, there are plenty of advisors around. You can go to the CFP.net website, for example. CFP Center Fired Pistol or Certified Financial Planner, CFP.net. And you can look up for, find a CFP that's close to you for, and maybe, you know, you can see their background and pick somebody that's within driving distance you want to drive. So don't settle. There are plenty of good choices out there. All right. I've got one more quick break here I need to take. I'll come back. I've got several more interesting things to share. Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we're back. All right. This is good. I had another question, and this is one way I'll answer my questions from listeners and readers. If you want to send me a question, I'm happy to answer it. info@davidholland.com will get the question over to me, info@davidholland.com, and I'll be happy to answer your question. It doesn't have to be fancy. It can just be a basic question, and I promise there's nothing to be embarrassed about. If you feel like it's a simple question, I'm happy to answer. Here's a gentleman who asked me a question. He sent me a question about his situation. He and his wife are both on Social Security, and they have about $2,000 a month left over after the Social Security and other income to invest each month. And his question to me is, well, oh no, I'm sorry, wait a minute. He's still working. That's right. That's another important thing. Social Security, still working, and he's got some other income. He still has $2,000 a month to invest. And his question to me is, do I put it into some sort of IRA? Do I convert to a Roth? Do I pay off my mortgage? Lots of questions. Don't have a lot to invest yet, but lots of questions. So I wrote him back and I said, well, if you're both working, you've got Social Security, and you've got this $2,000 left over every month, the first thing I would recommend doing, again, he said he didn't have a lot to invest, so that tells me he may not have a lot of cash on hand. So what I told them is that let's build a cash reserve. Okay. Before you invest, have a cash reserve. What you invest, you don't want to have to go grab right away for an emergency. So first thing I told them is, why don't you take five of those months or five of those paychecks, if you will, and let's build up. For him, I said, why don't you build up about a $10,000 cash reserve? That'd be good to take care of a lot of things that can go wrong, plumbing, roof, something you might need to do, a quick fix, car. So a good emergency fund. And I said, you know, you don't have to worry about that account, wherever you put that, making money. That's not the point. So don't get anxious or concerned about, you know, you're only earning 0.1%. Whatever it is, but you need it to be liquid. So that's number one. Number two, I said, after you have the $10,000 saved up, let's take that to, he's working, he's got Social Security, so I can do the math. He's got to be at least 65 years old. And he is still working because he still hasn't accumulated enough probably to retire. So I said, let's take that, and he has a mortgage. Let's take that $2,000 a month and let's apply it toward the mortgage. I don't want to see a nickel to invest, or he shouldn't invest until he's paid off that mortgage. And I think by doing that, it will very much accelerate getting that mortgage paid off. Now, once the mortgage is paid, now we can look at investments. And depending on this person's individual risk tolerance, how much are you willing to accept the up and down? We'll all take the up. You know, we talk about volatility. Volatility is great as long as it's all up, okay? But when it goes down, do you lose sleep? If the market were to drop 10%, or if your account were to drop 10%, would you lose sleep? Well, for a lot of people, the answer is yes. So they shouldn't be putting all their money into that, and they should maybe look at something more conservative. So that was my message to him. And I think that, you know, this is where you need to look at your situation and really think carefully. There's nothing wrong with not investing, okay? And I manage a lot of money for people, investing it for them. And that's what Scott does here in my office. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know what? I just can't stand the up and down. I've got a couple coming in to see me I've been working with for a couple of years now, and they've got some additional monies they want me to help them with. And we talked recently about what to do, and they said flat out, you know what? We just don't want to take risks with our money. So that very much narrows the choices I'm going to look at. Can I put their money into a growth mutual fund? No, not if I want to eliminate the chance of it going down. If you put your money into a growth mutual fund, it can go down. So, and this person has a lot of money. It's not about saying, well, I don't have enough to be aggressive. No, people that have more money, it just depends on the person. I know people that have a lot of money and they're very conservative. I know some people that have a lot of money that are very aggressive. And by the same token, I know people that are more, that don't have as much, they have more modest means, but they are either conservative or aggressive. So if that's you, it's okay. It's okay not to be aggressive with your money. All right. Those are some of the stories I had for you. Let me do a quick look at the headlines I wanted to get to and some of the things that we didn't quite get to with Scott. A couple of things that hit my attention. Wall Street Journal had some good things to report, or interesting to report. Toyota reclaimed the title of the world's largest automaker from GM in 2012. They rebounded from that earthquake damage. Remember that? It's all faded to our memories. Problems with their nuclear plants and damage to the factories. They had a lot of some embarrassing recalls, but they're on their way back. So that's one thing. And here's another interesting thing. Companies have stepped up. U.S. companies have stepped up their purchases of big ticket items toward the end of 2012. That's encouraging. A lot of increase in orders for non-defense capital goods, which is a good, they kind of use that as a good barometer for business spending. So it looks like business spending is increasing. And when business spending increases, that money is certainly going to get recycled through our economy. Couple of other things to share with you. We talked earlier, I'm going to have more for you on the bond yields. We've been watching the bond yields get, the 10-year bonds get closer to 2%. And what that tells us is that people are coming out of those bonds where there's not as much demand because people are putting their money into other things. There's a lot of reasons for that. Politics, things have settled down there. Europe, you know, there's still, it's not that long ago, we had some significant problems with Europe, but things have seemed to stabilize a little bit. China, the worries were that there was going to be a very hard landing with China and its economy, but it seems to be not a hard landing, kind of a soft landing. All those things are making people more confident about investing, and that's causing those 10-year treasuries to fall in value and the yield to go up, which is a good barometer for what's happening in our economy and the market. So watch that 10-year yield and You'll hear us talk about it right here on this program. Okay, out of time. I'll save the rest of my stack when we're together again. Have a great one.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.